Presbyterian Children's Home.
May it please the court. Mr. Brooks Conover and Mr. Kenneth Mulberg will present arguments to the petitioners. They have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Conover will begin.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Bill Conover, and I represent the petitioner, the Texas Commission on Human Rights. Mr. Mulberg, my co-counsel, represents the petitioner, Mrs. Spear. Today we're both going to argue before you. I'll be dealing with the religious corporation exception. Mr. Mulberg will be dealing with the religious activities exception. This is a case of first impression before this court. It is the first time that this court has been called upon to address the religious exemption under Article 5221K, the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act. The facts in this case are undisputed. Mrs. Spear applied for a job with the Presbyterian Children's Home and Service Agency. Mrs. O'Brien testified...
Excuse me, counsel, you said the facts are undisputed?
Yes, sir. As far as Mrs. Spear's qualifications go,
It's your burden in this case to demonstrate that there's no evidence to support the trial court's findings of fact.
That's correct.
And thus the judgment, correct?
That's correct.
Or that the law was misapplied.
Either there's no evidence or that there was an error as a matter of law, but the findings do not support the legal conclusion.
And on the issue that you are going to discuss with us today on whether it was a religious corporation, the Court of Appeals looked at what the trial court did and said that this was a conclusion of law that the trial court made, that this was not a religious corporation.
That's correct.
And looking at it as a question of law then, is the appropriate standard in evaluating whether an entity is a religious corporation, whether it is primarily or principally devoted to religious purposes?
That is the position of the Commission, that the primary purpose of the organization or the activity must be religious in nature. And it's the position of the Commission that there were no findings that would lead to that conclusion of law. There are no findings that the corporation was only devoted to religious purposes. This is an activity that is engaged in secular organizations. It's in essence a delegated function of government to this nonprofit organization.
So is it your position that to be a religious function, it must be uniquely religious?
It must be primarily religious. 99% of what the PCHSA does would be characterized as secular activities as opposed to...
Charity, secular, and not religious.
Is not a religious activity. It is an activity that is engaged in by secular entities.
Well, just because secular entities engage in it, does that mean it cannot be religious?
The test in this court, and no, yes, it could not be primarily religious. The test.
Benevolence is a typical religious activity, just general benevolence, the caring for the people who cannot care for themselves, but secular groups do that too. Does that mean that that's not religious?
It doesn't mean that it's not an aspect of a religious practice, but it does not mean that it's primarily religious. And the test that the federal courts have laid out for us is that there must be primary focus, must be religion.
So we can't look at charitable purposes at all because secular entities engage in charitable activities, so that can't be religious. Is that your argument?
Well, that's one factor to look at. And the case that came out of the United States Supreme Court yesterday, the cert denied case, was the Baptist Missionary Aviation Company. And the tax court had ruled that because the aviation was also a activity that secular organizations engaged in, the aviation company was not entitled to their nonprofit exemption. Now, that was an IRS nonprofit case as opposed to a religion case. But one of the factors that the court looked at in the tax court was whether or not this activity was engaged in by other secular organizations. I think a similar analogy can be applied here. The mere fact that maybe one aspect of a person's religious belief does not convert the adoption agency into or the adoption services into a purely religious activity. In fact, this is a delegated function from state government. State government provides funds to...
it's not delegated in the sense it's a state agency. There's a contract, isn't it?
Well, it's a contract, but there's a delegation of that state's authority to care for these wards, to have these children placed in proper homes. So that is our position, that that this is a delegated function of state government. It is not by any means a completely religious activity. It's primarily secular activity.
What do religious groups do that secular groups don't, except practice their religion?
Well, in this context, the only activity that was remotely religious was the attestation that the adoption worker was to sign, attesting to the faith and religious beliefs of the prospective parents. That was the only religious activity in this whole employment scenario. The job description, which has been provided to you and is also part of the transcript, does not contain a single reference to religious activities. The contract that the PCHSA signed with DHS expressly stated, and there's also a copy of that before you, expressly stated that there would be no discrimination on the basis of religion.
If this were a Christian daycare or some other kind of educational type of activity, then your position would be also that's not primarily religious activity.
No, sir. The courts have determined that persons in positions of preachers, ministers, and teachers of religious doctrine are entitled to that exemption. Texas law is much more narrow than the federal law. Our statute was adopted after the 1972 amendments to Title VII, which narrowed the federal exemption. However, the Texas legislature saw fit to retain the original language of Title VII so that our exemption is much more narrow. In Texas, you must not only be a religious corporation and make that finding, you must also find that there must be religious activities. Under federal law, all that needs to be found is that it's a religious corporation and everyone is entitled to it.
And these have to be looked at on a case-by-case basis.
Yes, sir.
But you agree that in looking at them on a case-by-case basis, the standard that was set out in EEOC against Townley Engineering of it being one that has a purpose and character that are primarily religious is the legal standard that the trial court and the Court of Appeals should have applied, but that they failed as a matter of law to apply.
Yes, sir. They did fail to apply that standard. They looked at eight different issues, and only two of those issues are not in dispute by this.
As far as looking at those eight issues, those were issues that are not found in any one case. This is kind of their commentary as they reviewed the various cases. Isn't that correct?
It was cobbled together, yes, sir. It does not provide a clear framework, I don't believe, for this court or any court to analyze these cases. They consider some factors that have been listed in the federal cases, but the test of Townley, the primary purpose, I think, is should be the focus of this court's inquiry.
And then there is federal authority on a factual situation that is very close to the one involved here. With the Methodist instead of the Presbyterian.
That's correct. In Fike versus United Methodist Children's Home, identical, in my mind, identical situation, Your Honor. In that case, there was federal funds that were going to the United Methodist Church Children's Home, and they were given so many dollars per child. In this case, we had the exact same situation.
How much? What's the percent?
The percent of money that goes to Presbyterian Children's Home from state agencies in 1989, I believe it was last year in the record, would have been about 5%. The percentage of funds from the Presbyterian Church was only 2.5%. So the amount of government assistance to this agency, as opposed to direct assistance from the Presbyterian Church, is twice the amount of the church.
Does it make any difference that people who profess to be Presbyterians contribute to this particular organization in the percentages which are represented in the briefs? In other words, it's funded by the church per se in a very fairly modest extent, but Presbyterians generally contribute to the running of the agency.
They do contribute, and we're not discounting their contribution. But
is that significant at all in what we're saying?
I think the significance is looking at the relationship between the church itself and this mission that they have.
And not the members of the church.
I think that is one factor, but I think that the main factor should be what is the direct tie between the church and the entity that's claiming the religious organization.
That's a factor the trial judge could have taken into account in making his findings of fact. Would you agree with that?
Yes, sir. I think he could have taken that into account, but I don't believe it should be given much weight at all because the main focus is what is the primary purpose the inquiry should be, what is the primary purpose of this organization? And the primary purpose is not a principally Christian or religious one. The primary purpose is the placement of adopted children in adopted homes. Mrs. O'Brien repeatedly testified that the primary purpose was to place children in foster care in adopted homes, not to promote religion. There was a two-hour interview.
Can you tell me why is it a religious purpose to teach a child, but it's not a religious purpose to put them in a Christian home? Or a religious home?
To teach a child in a religious educational institution would be indoctrinating or propagating the faith. And the case law is very clear that when an individual is employed by a religious corporation to propagate the faith, like a minister or educator, that they may claim the exemption.
Who better to propagate the faith than the parents?
The parents are not PCHSA. And PCHSA is not engaging in any activity which advances or furthers the Presbyterian faith. They don't take only Presbyterian children. They do not only deal with Presbyterian families, and they don't place these children only in Presbyterian homes.
Mr. Conover, I saw your light blink there, and I don't know if we're about to hear about religious activities or not, but before we do, let me ask you this question. If this is not a religious corporation, as determined by application of appropriate legal standards under if we rely on federal cases on this, then we really don't have to decide the activity question that your co-counsel is going to present.
That would be correct, because they never get to that step. And I was also pointing out to the court that Article 1, Section 6 of the Texas Constitution speaks in terms of denominations as opposed to this broad category that the Court of Appeals has established.
So looking at religions, we ought to look at Presbyterians, not Christianity.
Yes, sir, because when a person comes to the commission wanting an accommodation from the employer, we have to inquire as to what the particular belief is so that the employer can reasonably accommodate them. And Mr. Mulberg will get into that. But the same standard should be applied to the employer. The employer must articulate its particular articles of faith so that it can also come to that exception. Thank you, Your Honors.
The Honors Council, my name is Ken Mulberg. I'm from Dallas, Texas. As Justice Doggett, to get a little bit more into your question, the affirmative defense provided by Section 5.061 of the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act requires a defendant to prove not only that it is a religious organization under the Act, it must go further and prove that the work performed by the individual, here Ms. Spear, is connected with the performance of religious activities by the organization. Now, here is where the Texas statute parts company very dramatically with the federal counterpart. In the federal counterpart, as you are probably aware, there is no qualification of the activities being religious in nature. In Texas, there is. In other words, religious activities is an independent component of the test, so that even should you find that this is a religious entity or corporation, we still must get to the next step to see if the activities are in furtherance of religious purposes. There is no evidence in the record to support the conclusion that the performance of the duties of an adoption worker are connected with the performance of religious activities by the organization.
Mr. Mulberg, do we look at just at Ms. Spear's would-be activities, or do we look at the work activities of all the people who work there?
We would look at just the senior adoption worker position, Your Honor, under the case law, at least that has grown up over the years. You focus on the actual individual and the actual content of the job in question.
So if we're looking at, say, a custodial employee who doesn't have contact with adoptions, for example, that may not be a religious-oriented activity, but yet somebody who took a more active role.
Yes, I see where you're going, Your Honor, and I do agree with that. And I think what it gets down to is what is the strength of the connection between the religious activities and the job duties.
And that's what this court
has to focus on.
Fact-based determination?
I think generally it can be. I think maybe at times it's outside of the realm when you get the ministers, for example, or that indoctrinate in the faith. I think one can very readily see that, but not in an adoption worker context. There is admittedly very little case law that is helpful to us on this second prong. The federal act has been amended since 72. 20 years, we have had no case law in the federal arena. I do want to point out that the appellate court, the court below, looked at the Amos case for direction. The Amos case is only helpful to a certain extent. It gives generally a three-prong approach when looking at duties or activities. The problem is two of those prongs relate primarily to the first test we're dealing here today with, and that is organization. The aspect of the Amos case that is fundamental to your decision, if it applies at all, is whether or not there is a substantial relationship between the duties of an adoption worker, in this case, and the religious organization's rituals or tenets. There is no evidence that there's a connection between those two in this case. The most fundamental piece of evidence in this case that tells us what the adoption worker has to do with is before you today, and it is the job description. That is Presbyterian's job description for this position. And believe me, Your Honors, if there was a religious component necessary to this job, it would have been in the one central document that governed the job. It is absent.
Well, you have to have a minister who refers you.
Excuse me?
I see that a minister has to be one of the references of any applicant.
Well, one of the, I think you'll also find that in the testimony, Chief Justice Phillips, that various candidates answer not applicable to that. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at the application itself, which is another stark piece of evidence, it says you do not have to be Presbyterian to have this job. Now, I think this court needs to construct a standard by which to determine and judge the second prong of 5.061. There is no case that really gives you guidance in doing so unless it be the reference in footnote 4 in the Amos case. This court should devise a standard whereby it demands a close or substantial connection between the work to be performed by an individual, here the adoption worker, and the performance of the corporation's religious activities. This, indeed, is a test, I think, that should apply in cases of this nature.
One of the, I guess, related matters, Mr. Mulberg, the trial court made no finding under the bona fide occupational qualification.
That's correct.
Section. How does that interplay with what you're telling us about religious activities?
Well, it really doesn't. BFOQ is a separate element. I realize the commission has briefed it to some extent, but the fact of the matter, Justice Doggett, is you really don't reach that until you overcome this hurdle.
If we overcome this hurdle and we find that there is no religious corporation involved here,
right,
then was it not also error for the trial court to fail to make a determination there?
Absolutely.
Is the appropriate disposition to remand for that determination?
For that determination and very possibly the accommodation / undue hardship argument, yes. And the fact that there's no evidence in the record on either one of those is very, very telling here. Those tests can't be met in practical effect. The unfortunate situation is there's no determination on it. I have very brief period of time. Let me remind the court that the appellate court totally blew on the test even taken from the Amos case. It compared the job duties with the tenets of the Presbyterian Church. If you look at it, it doesn't even, in all deference to the Fifth Court, it doesn't even make sense when you read our statute. Our statute demands that you judge the duties of the job against the organization's function, not the church's function. The appellate court, how it got off on that, I'm not real clear. I think, and I hurry here because I feel that this is very important, I think any time you're dealing with a case of first impression, you need to consider something that is not ordinarily considered in many cases, and that is the consequences of this ruling. The ruling of the courts below is a scary proposition to people like me who promote agencies like PCHSA. When you define religion however you want to define it, when you rubberize it, when you use it and you can cover anything you want to with it, that means that my Catholic school is going to have to be hiring Presbyterian Catholic teachers for Catholic class. If Christianity is the demarcation line rather than Catholic, Methodist, that is a worrisome sort of deal. What the lower courts have done is just so broadly define everything against 5.061, which demands a quote-unquote particular religion. You write, a lot of these agencies write off the book in their ability to take advantage of that exception. The courts below did not even realize that. And if you don't do that, if you don't see it that way, and you allow them to go ahead and call religion whatever they want it to be under the circumstances, then you obliterate the non-discrimination provisions of the Act. There's a lot at stake here.
Mr. Mulberg, I can't recall, did you request any additional findings of fact or objective findings in the trial court?
I don't believe we did, Your Honor. I did not. I was not the trial court attorney.
Okay, I meant, the trial counsel. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you,
Your
Honor.
Court is ready to hear arguments from respondent.
May it please the court. Mr. Stephen Fink will present argument for respondent.
May it please the court, Your Honors, the controversy upon which this appeal came to the court is moot. Ms. Spear testified at trial that she immediately obtained a better paying job when she was not offered a position with the Presbyterian Children's Home Service Agency, which I'm going to refer to in my argument as the agency. At trial, she disclaimed any interest in a job with the agency. She also testified that she was not seeking damages of any kind. She simply wanted an injunction and a declaration that the agency must hire, quote, the most qualified person.
So if we had none of these other disputes and the discrimination was blatant racial discrimination by the agency, as long as the employee took another job, there'd be nothing the Texas Human Rights Commission could do about it.
Well, there's more to it than that, Your Honor. Ms. Spear, very unusually, in the only case of this kind that I've ever handled, said that she was not seeking any relief but injunctive relief and declaratory relief. And as I was about to point out to the court, the agency, effective January 31, 1992, has gotten out of the adoption service business and no longer employs senior adoption workers. Moreover, the legislature, subsequent to the events in this case, but prior to the trial, amended the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act immediately after the Amos decision to extend the religious exemption, and I've put the two statutes in front of the court to eliminate the religious activities requirement. Now under Texas law, just like federal law, a religious organization may limit its hiring only to persons of the same religion, regardless of whether those persons are engaged in religious activities or not.
Well, you're not suggesting that that has retroactive effect, are you?
Yes, Your Honor, I am suggesting it has retroactive effect in this case, and I believe the Court of Appeals erred in one, saying that it didn't when no party argued in the trial court or to the Court of Appeals that the new statute didn't have effect. This case was tried on the theory that the new provision of the Act did apply. Judge Whittington specifically asked the parties at trial if there was any disagreement on that point. They said no. No one contended in the Court of Appeals that it didn't apply. The Court of Appeals, on its own motion, raised the question, found that it was error to apply the new statute and said it was not retroactive. And I contend that, one, procedurally they erred in deciding a point that was not raised in the trial court or brought before them. And second, when they did decide it, they decided it incorrectly. Yes, Your Honor.
Even under this new language, I would like for you to answer two questions for me. One, what religious activities would the placement worker be involved in as far as dealing with the spiritual health or life of an individual or inculcating some religious doctrine, what have you. What religious activities, per se, would this person be involved in, number one? Number two, what is the same religion? Church of Christ as opposed to Presbyterian, as opposed to Methodist or Baptist or Seventh-day Adventist or Mormon or Catholic or some other denomination, because some of those denominations consider their religion exclusive, even though they all come under a broad heading of Christianity. They do not admit to the salvation of those other denominations.
The exclusive purpose of the agency is not child care per se. It is Christ-centered child care. That is expressed in its bylaws, it's expressed in its literature, it's expressed in its purpose. Senior adoption workers provide Christ-centered child care. That was the religious activity that they were engaged
in. They're actually involved in the care of these children?
They were involved in screening parents. Parents who had to demonstrate their Christian commitment before they would be found suitable by this agency as adopted parents. And a key function of the senior adoption worker was to screen parents for their Christian commitment and determine whether they met
that standard. You don't think someone who does you know, not profess the divinity of Christ could determine someone else's credentials in that regard?
Ms. Spear in this case...
I mean, that would be, I would assume, the sole standard you could impose for Christ-centered would be someone who held that Jesus was divine, was the Messiah. And we don't believe that someone, and that could be the only criteria, because these other denominations have all sorts of ideological and dogma, and dogmatic and doctrinaire attitudes about other things called Christians or non-Christians.
The
one thing they all agree on is the messianic role of Jesus.
The agency set several standards for judging the parent's Christian commitment. The senior adoption workers were to make that assessment. Of course, believing in Christ, being Christian themselves, was a baseline requirement. The agency had others as well. They had to determine whether they were serious, active Christians. That required, for example, that both parents be active in the same church. It did not have to be a Presbyterian church, but it did have to be one of the Christian churches. And the senior adoption workers were involved in that process. But even more broadly than that, Justice Gamage, the purpose of this agency overall is to offer Christ-centered child care. I mean, Justice Brennan put it best in the Amos case. This is a way that a religious organization defines itself. It says we have a religious mission, and we do exclude others from pursuing it to define it as religious.
Is it for that reason, then, that the policy of the agency is embodied in the rejection letter to the Spirit that it hires only Christians?
That was the agency's policy.
So that means not only no Jewish senior adoption workers, but no Jewish accountants, no Jewish nutritionists, no Jewish drivers, no Jewish custodians, right?
The agency hires only Christians. That's right, Justice Doggett.
So Jews would be excluded from all of those, whether they had, even if they had no direct contact with the children, they would be excluded.
That's correct, Your Honor. This case involves only the senior adoption worker position. No challenge has been raised other than with respect to the senior adoption worker position. As I say, they do not have a senior adoption worker position any longer.
As far as the religious corporation standard, which is carried over in the new statute or the revised statute, if it's applicable in this case, do you agree with the standard, the legal standard, that was set forth in the EEOC against Townley Engineering case?
Yes, we have no dispute with the standard of primarily religious. It is correct that the Court of Appeals found that the petitioners had waived any factual challenge to the findings they made.
Well, let me... Just pause on that issue, and I want you to be able to answer fully, but as I read the Court of Appeals case, they said they weren't looking at the factual aspect of this. This was a question of law, that there had been a conclusion of law by the trial court that this was a religious corporation, and they concluded many factors later that the trial court was correct in its conclusion of law.
That's correct. You characterized it correctly. They decided it. They said they were going to decide it solely as a legal question. But there is one factual finding which was not challenged, which was waived, which bears on a question you raised earlier about the FICA case.
Right.
Two things about the FICA case. One is the language that Your Honor referred to as dicta. The court decided the case on the basis that the agency had not discriminated. It was appealed. The Fourth Circuit specifically refused to address that question. But what the district court there did find is that that agency had deviated from its original Christian purpose. In this case, Judge Whittington specifically found that this agency had not deviated from its original religious purpose, and that finding was not challenged by petitioners on appeal. And it is a critical finding as far as distinguishing the FICA case. But we do agree that the Townley case states the right standard. And, of course, we would point out that a for-profit manufacturing company, which, of course, Townley was a far different thing than a not-for-profit religious-affiliated organization whose purpose is to offer Christ-centered child care.
If the activity of the adoption worker is so closely related to the religious purpose of the corporation, why didn't it say so in the job description?
Your Honor, the job description was an attempt to describe primarily the secular functions of the job. You know, the state litigated for years and years and years with Lester Roloff's Evangelical Ministries to establish the proposition that the state had a legitimate interest in regulating the minimum standards for child care religious providers, all the while proclaiming, and this court agreed, that the state had no legitimate interest in the religious tenets. And frankly, the agency finds it a low blow as well for the state to come in now and say, because we try to have professional child care workers that meet professional standards as well as our religious goals, that now suddenly their purpose is no longer primarily religious. The job description was an attempt. State regulations require that there be job descriptions, and the job description was an attempt to set out the professional requirements of the position.
If applying the test set forth in Townley, we should conclude, contrary to your argument, that this is not a religious corporation and that the trial court erred as a matter of law in finding otherwise. Is it appropriate then to remand this for a determination as to whether the bona fide occupational qualification exemption applies?
The district court did not make a finding on bona fide occupational qualification. So if the court does find that the Court of Appeals erred, then that would be an appropriate disposition, and one the petitioners asked for is a remand for a finding on that point. All of the other issues except bona fide occupational qualification turn on a finding on whether or not the agency is a religious corporation, Justice Dodd.
You've referenced it being a low blow or something to that effect of the state coming in now and questioning this. How does this policy that the agency had of effectively putting up a sign saying Jews need not apply or non-Christians need not apply for any position that we have, how can you square that with the agency entering a contract with the state that it was not discriminating on the basis of religion and putting the same thing in its handbook for employees?
Your Honor, we have always taken the position, and as was brought out at trial, that the Department of Human Services has never contested it, that what we have undertaken to do is not to illegally discriminate, not to violate the law. And ever since the TCHRA has been in effect, this exemption has existed, and since 1989, this exemption has existed. The agency does not discriminate illegally. The agency follows Title VII. The agency follows TCHRA.
There's not anything in this record to suggest that this woman was denied this job for any reason other than the fact that she was not, that she was Jewish.
Oh, yes, there is, Your Honor.
What is it?
It is that during the course of the hiring process, the agency decided that it needed to increase its emphasis on the minority community. And in fact, the person who was hired for the job subsequent to Ms. Spears' application was a minority herself and someone also with excellent qualifications as a child care worker, also a Christian. What we agreed to in the trial court was that the agency had this policy and that Ms. Spear would not have been offered a position. But in fact, and we argued this as a defense, which the judge did not address because he found us exempt, that the other candidate would have been hired in any event. And of course, we would assert that defense also on remand if it goes back.
But at this point, there's no finding of fact or conclusion of law regarding that.
No, the trial judge did not address that, nor did the Court of Appeals because of the procedural posture of the case. Let me address the religious corporation issue. I've already said we agree to the standard. The question is this agency's function primarily religious? And we say, yes, it is. And to answer that question, you can look at the statute itself. The statute doesn't define religious corporation, but it does define religion. And it says in Section 20114 that religion includes all aspects of religious practice as well as belief. Now, the petitioners seem to say that, as Justice Heck and Justice Korn was asking, that if an activity has any interest to the secular world, it can't be religious. And we think that's far too narrow a definition of what is religious. By that standard, because a Catholic priest who's administering wine during the sacraments, during the Mass, wouldn't be acting religiously because wine stewards in expensive restaurants also serve wine. We think that's not the test. And in fact, again, Justice Brennan has recognized it best that he said churches often regard the provision of community services as a means of fulfilling religious duty and providing an example of the way of life a church seeks to foster. Under the petitioner's test, only preachers and educators and proselytizers for religion could be engaged in religious activity, and we don't think that's what the Texas legislature had in mind.
Mr. Moberg, I hate to interrupt your thinking, but I want to pull you back for a moment to Justice Doggett's line of questions, where the question was about the job description not requiring someone to be a Christian. Is there somewhere in the Presbyterian Children Home and Service Agency's charter, bylaws, or rules or regulations anywhere that the employees should be Christian?
There is a reference to it in the personnel policies. It is a policy. It has been a long-standing policy of the board. It was reaffirmed in the mid-1980s. And the only statement of it in writing in the record, Justice Hightower, is in the letter that did go out to Ms. Spear, in which she was informed.
Well, but there was no written policy anywhere. There were guidelines to the administrators about hiring.
There are written policies. The personnel policies refer to the Christian mission, the Christ-centered child care, establishing Christian commitment.
No, I'm talking about guidelines for hiring, that you must hire Christians.
It is not in the written policies that the agency will hire only Christians. It was undisputed at trial that that was the policy, had been the policy, and that, in fact, the agency had never hired in any position any employee who was not a Christian, but it was not in the written personnel policy.
It was just an unwritten policy.
Well, it was a policy that the board had adopted and then had...
Is that in the minutes of the board meeting somewhere?
I'm sure it is in the minutes, Your Honor. Those were not
there
made
was
part
no,
of,
no documentation of this before the court.
It was not made part of the record in this case, but the board did in the mid-80s ask for legal advice and then reaffirm formally the policy that the agency would hire.
How do you know this?
Well, Your Honor, I was the lawyer who was asked to advise the agency whether this was permissible under Title VII and the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act.
But this record, no record of this action was produced for the court.
The minutes of the board meeting were not produced. As I say, there was never any question raised in the trial court that this was the agency's policy and it had been followed. There was discovery in that they were asked whether any non-Christians had ever been hired. Of course, the answer was
question. It's not a question. That was a question of practice. More than was a policy. If you have an unwritten rule, you have a job description that you promulgate. It sets out certain requirements, but it makes no allusion to this religious requirement.
Ms. Spear had not seen any job description at the time she was interviewed or at the time she was told her initial contact
with the agency. But one existed, correct?
At her initial contact with the agency, she was informed that the agency only hires Christians. Her religion wasn't gotten into in the interview until sort of toward the end the question was raised, and she informed the interviewer that she was Jewish, and she then said, well, I'm going to have to get back to you. It is our policy of only hiring Christians. I need to check with the board. Subsequently, then a letter went to Ms. Spear in which she was informed. She came to the agency because she had a phone call from a friend at the Department of Human Services who said the agency's looking for someone. She picked up the phone, called, and went over either that day or the very next day and had the interview. So almost before anything else, she was informed that this was the agency's policy. Again, on the religious corporation purpose, the question is whether, you know, by putting into practice their beliefs, by putting into practice what they see to be Christian doctrine, the agency and the people who work for the agency are doing anything less religious than.
What about someone who has no denomination?
You know, I actually never get back to answer your other question, and that comes up. As long as the person is a Christian, as far as the agency's policy is concerned.
How do they determine that?
They ask the person, and they have to make the determination
themselves.
Do they
define it?
You know, and I think they make the determination who is a Christian and who is not.
I wonder about, you know, Unitarianism is generally conceived or regarded as one of the Christian denominations, but there are many Unitarians who don't concede the divinity of Jesus, but they adhere to Christian principles and practices.
Well, I must say, I don't know how the agency would answer that question. There has been an issue raised in this case. In fact, it is a keystone of the plaintiff's case that Christianity is not a religion, at least for purposes of the act. They have argued, Ms. Spear testified, that Judaism was a religion, Islam, Shinto, but Christianity was not. And Mr. Hale, the executive director of the Texas Commission on Human Rights, also testified that Christianity was not a religion within the meaning of the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act.
Wasn't it more a matter under this act of looking at the individual Christian denominations instead of looking at them as a cluster?
Well, that's what Mr. Hale testified to, Justice Doggett, but Ms. Spears' charge of discrimination is on file. It's Defendant's Exhibit 1, and she was not asked, was she Orthodox, Reform, or Conservative Jewish? She just said she was Jewish. The only other testimony is Mr. Hale said, well, it's sort of our practice when someone comes in to ask them if they say they're Christian, which denomination they belong to. And he said, based on that the commission's formal interpretation of the term religion under the act excludes Christianity as a religion.
Somewhere before the last long spate of questions that you responded to, you were telling us that if we did what Mr. Mulberg was saying, that there wouldn't be any one that was excluded under that test from religious activities except those like ministers who were actually involved in promoting the faith. And my question to you is the converse. Under your test, would there be anyone excluded?
Well, of course there could be people excluded.
Who would explain to us how, under the test, what the test is that you would advance on religious activities and how anyone would be excluded under that test?
Well, I mean, Justice Brennan announced or suggested one test in Amos, and that is, one, the activity has to be nonprofit, and two,
That's the organization.
Well, no, I'm saying, yes, the activity has to be nonprofit, the agency has to be affiliated with a recognized religious group, and that the activity itself has to advance the purposes of that group.
So what kind of persons or activities could be affiliated with this agency could be excluded under your test?
Well, under the law as it stands now,
I'm talking
there's no
the
need
religious,
to...
the religious activity standard that you're talking about.
if that applies.
Well, the unanimous Supreme Court found that the only test, the majority simply said, we're not going to announce a test. Justice Brennan said the test is for religious activity. He said that it would violate the Constitution to make that determination, to put religious organizations to the test of determining which of their activities were religious and were not religious, right, would be unconstitutional. And what I'm suggesting is that's essentially, as the law stands now, both Title VII and Texas law, religious organizations aren't put to that test and ought not to be.
That gets us back to whether the 89 statute applies, but you were responding to Mr. Wahlberg's argument about the religious activity test, and if I understand what you're saying in referring back to Justice Brennan, the standard that you would apply would include everything within religious activity if it occurred by a religious corporation.
It would include all activities of a religious corporation, just as the legislature said, Justice Dodd.
The answer to my question then, on your standard, you would have us apply to religious activities if it is the 1983 Act that applies, everyone would be included as a religious activity and no one would be doing a non-religious activity.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I mean, as a factual matter, I mean, I agree. I think the courts have said this is a very highly factual, specific question. I don't think there's even an issue as to a senior adoption worker. I mean, the very function of the agency is adoption placement. And if that is religious activity, then that person's activity is religious. Now, if you get to the question of the bookkeeper or the accountant under the old standard, I think you'd simply have to look at what they do and how closely it is related to the underlying
what
purpose.
They do and how, because it's this standard that your opponent has asked us to write. We may or may not need to do that, but if we are writing that standard on religious activity, you would look at what the person does and how closely it related to religious activities?
It is essentially, I suppose, the test that the Court of Appeals drew from the district court decision in the Amos case, which there was basically a three-part test along the lines you've suggested, and there, applying that test, the district court in Amos at least found, for example, that a maintenance engineer in the Deseret Gymnasium that was run by the Mormon Church was not doing work connected with religious activity. But then they found at least a fact question as to employees who were manufacturing goods in the sheltered workshop run by the Mormon Church. So I think it would be a fact-specific inquiry. In fact, in this case, that inquiry was made both by the trial court and by the Court of Appeal, applying that test, which has never been approved by anyone but the district court in Amos, and found that this agency, with respect to this position, satisfied the test.
I'm still having some difficulty. If this were confined to Presbyterian, I would have a much easier time with it. But when you say Christian, I have a great deal of difficulty defining that term. What is a Christian and what is a non-Christian, and is there a legal definition of what a Christian or a non-Christian is? In other words, I know that in the Presbyterian denomination, ritual baptism is a very important part of their doctrine, as it is with the Baptists, even though I heard a Presbyterian minister once say one of them is dry cleaned and the other one's wet washed. It is in the Catholic Church. It is in many Christian denominations. Some would hold even that if you did not go through the physical ritual baptism, that there was no salvation for you. If you had an individual who had never participated or attended religious services or participated in any rituals of any Christian denomination, who had never been baptized, who had never made any public profession of faith, who came to this agency applying for a job and they said, are you a Christian? Said, sure, yeah. How would that person be regarded? This person had never demonstrated any religious faith or profession of any kind in any of their activities throughout their entire life. But they say, oh, yeah, you got to be a Christian. I'm a Christian.
Well, Your Honor,
how would that be dealt with?
Your question, I think, points out very well why these sorts of questions ought to be left to religious people and not to lawyers or
judges.
But
as I said, I would have a much easier time dealing with it if you said Presbyterian,
well,
or Baptist, or Methodist, or these are denominations that we recognize as Christian. And you must have made a public profession of faith, or whatever these denominations require.
Well, for purposes of
because
this
they,
case,
these very denominations deny the Christianity of people who have not been through these things that I suggested to you.
For purposes of this case, the question is, what does the term religion mean under the statute?
And also, what does the term Christian mean?
Well,
because this person was rejected, not because they had no religion, but because they were not Christian.
But
what kind of Christian?
What the statute says is that religious organizations or corporations can limit or give preference to members of the same religion. So the question
what
here
religion?
Is Christianity the religion?
I would say by that definition, how can it be?
Well, one ordinary meaning, if you look in the dictionary, I look into the definition of Christianity, it describes it as a religion. If you look at Presbyterianism, it defines it as a church within the Christian religion. The EEOC has addressed this very question in interpreting Title VII. The Texas legislature directed the agency to defer to interpretations of Title VII. They came to the very same conclusion. They said, for purposes of this language, Christianity is the religion, and the various denominations of Christianity are just that, denominations. There are two cases which we cited to the court under federal law which come to that very same conclusion. So for purposes of this case, I understand your puzzlement, and as I say,
I'm sincerely
why,
puzzled. I'm not being argumentative.
No,
I need answers.
And that is why, as I say, it seems to me, the Christians ought to be deciding who qualifies as
but
a
who
Christian
are they?
Under the policy.
Who are they? That's the bottom line.
In this case,
what denomination is the real Christian denomination that's going to decide whether everyone else is Christian or not?
Well, I say it wasn't disputed in this case, at least, that these were sincere Presbyterian Christians.
I don't doubt their sincerity.
Sincere.
I don't doubt their sincerity, but I do doubt the adequacy of their terminology and the propriety of their standards when they basically are saying, if you're Jewish, we know you're not a Christian. If you're Islam, if you profess the Islamic faith, we know you're not Hindu or Buddhist. Any of the sects, the variety of sects that exist under all of those recognized religions.
Well,
we know you're not a Christian. There would be some, however, in the Buddhist faith who would hold that you can be both a Buddhist and a Christian.
Well, it, at least in this case, it didn't arise. Ms. Spear, of course, when she testified that she did not know what Christ-centered childcare was. She was not Christian herself. She did not believe Christianity was a religion, and she agreed that in assessing the Christian commitment of parents, that it would be helpful to be Christian, just as if you were assessing the Jewish faith of someone, it would be helpful to be Jewish. And so while I acknowledge that at the extremes there may be some definitional questions, as an agency looking to comply with the law uses the term religion. And if the agency had attempted to limit its hiring only to Presbyterians, I think persons could come in justly and say, wait a minute, Presbyterianism under its ordinary meaning and as defined by the EEOC and as defined by the federal courts isn't a religion.
This, the language of this standard is so vague that I'm not sure it's capable of being applied as a standard.
Mr. Chief Justice, could I call the court's attention to the fact that the time has long expired?
I understand that. In the fact of this court, if any judge has a question, you can ask it, and if the counsel is being responsive, I'll allow an answer. You have heard the question.
Not at this time.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear a rebuttal argument.
Counsel, can you explain why this case is not moot?
This case is not moot, even accepting everything my opponent says, for the very reason that the action titles one to a declaration of whether or not something is lawful or unlawful. And attorney fees and court costs.
Your pleading request a declaratory relief.
Indeed it does. Justice Hightower, I'm going to answer your question that Mr. Fink was unable to answer. And by doing so, I'm going to say that I think it is a very pernicious policy unallowed by the Act that would exclude a janitor as well as a groundskeeper or even a senior adoption worker from employment with PCHSA because one is a Jew. Let me read you Plaintiff's Exhibit 14, which is the policy of the agency. PCHSA is an equal opportunity employer. All personnel actions such as recruitment, hiring, promotion, compensation, benefits, transfer, etc. are administered in conformity with applicable federal and state equal employment opportunity laws and regulations. PCHSA seeks to base all employment decisions on the individual's qualifications, merit, and ability to perform. That is the policy.
Does the 83 Act apply, or 89, or do you want to
either one? Your Honor, frankly, I don't think it makes any difference, and I'll tell you why. Because what you get into is a particularity of religion under 507A2.
I think we've heard something about that.
Right. And if you will notice, 5.061 contains really that quote-unquote particular religion, which I view as a component of that also. I see that really as the amendment is not really making a great deal of difference in this case. I see that TCHR may differ with me on that, but the Commission may differ with me on
it. But you're seeking a declaration as to the meaning of the 1983 Act?
Yes, indeed.
What superseded statute that will, what benefit will this declaration be to anybody?
Perhaps I did not understand your question just
I was before. Just asking, you're seeking a declaration of the 1983 Act, an act that's been superseded by
no.
the 1989 Act?
No, it has not been superseded to any extent.
Well, to the extent of the exception that's posted on the board?
I see, I do not see that running in conflict with 5.061. In our pleadings, Your Honor, simply seek a declaration as allowed by law to declare this action against my client because she is a Jew and nothing else. Although she is the best qualified illegal, that's the declaration we're seeking. The second point, Article 1, Section 6, Justice Doggett of the Justice Gammage of the Constitution talks in terms of religious denominations. That is the only thing that makes sense if we look at all of these questions, rhetorical and otherwise, that have been about the court in the last 5 or 10 minutes. Third, the activity of an adoption worker. The only quasi-religious component of the whole job that they could come up with in the record during trial was that the senior adoption worker had to attest to, witness, if you will, the parent's signature of the statement of faith and the Christian commitment as described by the adopted parents minister. That's it. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments for this morning. The foregoing clauses are submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will now please adjourn the court.
The audience is too bad. Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned, subject to call.